Let's get to our guest, Mikio Kumada, financial economist at LGT Capital Partners. So, Mikio, as usual, great to have you on the program, so don't disappoint. We're hearing more and more now, I think, from smart money people, no shock and awe from Powell. Yes, the consensus has been that he will be hawkish, but no shock and awe. So I'm wondering whether that means that the actual pain trade here will be down if he surprises us with a little bit more hawkishness than perhaps we thought.
Yeah, I think the risk is there for a bit, for a surprise on the hawkish side. We've been talking for a while. In the old days, I used to talk a lot about nominal GDP, and I'm going to do that again. If you look at nominal aggregates and the best nominal handle on GDP when you don't have the real life data is retail sales. And there you can see a huge gap between nominal retail sales, which are, a 45 degree line pointing towards the sky, whereas the real number is actually coming down. But that gap, of course, between the nominal growth, which is very high still, and the declining real volume is what you see in inflation, right? So that's why we have excessive inflation. But the point I want to make is that if you even look at the real number, it's still above trend. So nominal demand in the U.S. is just still excessive, certainly relative to supply, but also relative to its own trend. And that means the Fed will have to tighten if it wants to reduce inflation, because inflation is not due to Putin or energy prices. It's always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. So, yeah, the risk is there that we will get a hawkish surprise. Maybe not a Jackson Hole, because that's kind of priced in, but, over the next few weeks or months.
Is it warranted, Mikio?
The hawkish surprise.
Hawkishness, and indeed.
Yes, absolutely.
And the worries.
Yeah, absolutely, because, again, I'm going to go back to my favorite topic of nominal GDP growth. For years, I have been an easy money person because nominal GDP growth was low. And now we have nominal GDP growth of 8%, 9%. That's excessive. So you need to tighten until you get down to 4% or 5%, which is potential over the normal.
Give us a sense of what you really believe is going to happen looking ahead here. We do have, of course, huge risk. China, for instance, that they continue zero COVID lockdowns. On top of that, of course, got geopolitics. But what does this all mean for, let's say, the dollar and also the different equity classes around the world?
Well, that's a very broad question, so I'm gonna get back to you with a broad answer. I mean, let's focus on the U.S. first. My point about this whole nominal GDP talk earlier is that at the end of the day, we're going to be fine in the U.S., and that's also why we're always that market relative to the others. Right now I checked the actual number. Actually, it's 9.3% nominal GDP growth. If you look at revenue growth on the S&P, it's something like 14%. If you go down to the smaller and mid-sized cap, mid caps and small caps, it goes up to 25% on aggregate for the overall indices. Now, with these numbers, it's very hard to imagine anything that you could classify as an earnings recession, even as nominal GDP growth slows down as the Fed keeps tightening to bring the inflation part of the nominal GDP down. And so I think, a year from now, we're going to have 4.5% nominal GDP growth, which is going to be just fine. Now, that composition may be tricky. Because it may be 3% inflation or 3.5% inflation and just 0.5% point of growth, of real growth output.
Right, but it's not recession is what you're saying. You're getting through.
And if you keep that income growth at 4.5% steady for a while, the rest is going to sort itself out and the economy is going to balance itself.
If people are employed, they may trim spending, but they won't stop spending. Listen, I wanted to ask you about Joseph Stiglitz's comment. We don't have all that much time, but he's basically saying that if you raise rates too much, you may actually worsen inflation. And what he's saying, the reason about that is because of the supply chain bottlenecks. And he said what you need now is investment in fixing those bottlenecks, but higher interest rates makes it more difficult to make those investments. Any resonance with you, Mikio?
I think that's micromanaging, trying to micromanage the structural side of the economy a bit too much. I mean, in theory, yes, but you know, these things take time. So I think it's much more wiser to look at aggregate nominal income growth and let the economy sort itself out and bring that down to an average normal number, reasonable number. And then the economy will sort itself out over the course of, you know, a year or two as people figure out what to do in that kind of stable environment. Remember, we just distributed too much money, which is nominal income, during the pandemic, and that's the price we're paying now. You know, overall, I think even though a lot of people criticize the Fed, it's actually doing a pretty decent job, because you could argue that they were a bit late in tightening. But, you know, again, 2-3 years from now, it's going to look like a blip.
Mikio, okay, this, the U.S. is one thing, but Europe, I mean, how does this figure in your investment horizon? And again, I'm using broad brushstrokes. How does this all play out there? I mean, they've got this geopolitical overlay with energy in particular and inflation, which is pretty rampant. How do you look at it?
Yeah, so, you know, these are the shoes that are out there and liable to drop. Europe is a problem, and also China is a problem in economic terms. And, you know, that's these days also mixed up with geopolitics. So, you know, mentioning inflation, I mean, we do talk a lot about the U.S. inflation, but in the U.S., it's a monetary phenomenon, demand and supply mismatches, too much demand, too little supply. In Europe, it's a different story because it's energy. If you look at the composition of the inflation, of the current headline inflation, in the U.S., about a third is food and energy driven, and that's also coming down, whereas in Europe, it's two-thirds. So there you see the price for not boosting, not what they did during COVID, but what they did over the past 20 years, which is...
Mikio, that's all we've got time for. Always a pleasure talking to you, Mikio Kamada, with his analysis of Jackson Hole and beyond, financial economist at LGT Capital Partners.